Coming up, what an excellent day for goodbyes. Well, howdy folks, and welcome to Minute 119 of The Exorcist Minute, a show where we endeavor to examine, extrapolate, and excavate The Exorcist, minute by terrifying minute. My name is Lester Ryan Clark.
And I'm Keenan Diaz.
And we'll be your holy guides on this journey through what some have called the scariest movie of all time. Okay, so our minute begins with Merrin setting down the Roman ritual.
And it ends with him about to pray.
Yes, folks. This is another one of those speechless minutes, literally and figuratively. There is no dialogue in this minute, but so much happens, and we're going to cover it all today. So let's get back to the top of this minute. Merrin has just crossed over to the left bedside table. We see that that lamp has since been removed. Remember, it was on the floor, still on, lighting the room from below and giving the room a weird M.C. Escher feeling. Mm-hmm. Now, the end table is bare with just a cloth covering the surface. After setting down the Roman ritual, we cut, and we're closer now, on a shot of Merrin's hands as he opens his small leather bag and takes out the crucifix. Just like before, he kisses it, specifically on the feet, I believe, and he sets it down. Beyond him, farther back in the shot, we see Reagan on the bed. After setting down the crucifix, Merrin then takes out the holy water bottle and removes the stopper. Just as he begins to straighten up, we cut to a close-up of Reagan slash Howdy as Reagan's breath hitches in her chest. Keenan, this is a very quick cut, and then we're back on Merrin as he straightens the rest of the way up. Doing this show with you, and really seeing how intentional every single shot is, I mean, you know that logically, but then you examine a film shot by shot, sometimes frame by frame, and now I'm focusing maybe on the less obvious shots, the ones that go by really quick, the ones that you don't really focus on. This one is so quick, but it leaves an impression. It feels like it needs to be there, but I can't articulate why, other than maybe Howdy is aware of what's happening, what's about to happen, and he's girding himself.
Well, I like going back and seeing this shot of Reagan because it is rather ambiguous. It sort of is a blank slate. So I like that in retrospect where we don't get a hint. You know, we don't get that wink where Howdy is like, just where I want him. This is what's, right. You know, I'm going to eat this kid right now, you know, or any of that stuff. It just is. Seems to be just Howdy existing, and so we're there, and so we're both afraid of him enough because of context, afraid for her enough because of context, but it's not tipping its hand.
Right. Yeah. It's very. It's confusing. It's jarring. It's like it's this same pitiful, saintly face, and you're just like, oh man, I feel so sorry for Reagan. But then you're like, wait, no, that's not Reagan. That's Howdy. That's Howdy making that face. And do I feel sorry for Howdy?
Just let him out a little bit. Let him run around a little bit. Tire himself out.
Yeah, maybe he's just got all that pent up energy. Just like you know, let him you know run up and down those steps a little. And
yeah, he's like a guinea pig. He's like a hamster.
Yeah, right. give him a big meal right afterwards, and he'll just be out like a light. You know? Yeah. Oh yeah, of course you can wait up for Santa. Of course, right? And he's just gonna fall asleep anyway, guys. Come on. Yeah. Oh, you can. Oh, of course you can watch this this grown up movie about people on a jury. Yeah, of course you can watch it.
Is that just court TV? Have you tricked your kid into wanting to stay up and just watch the news?
I was thinking like, I don't know, 12 Angry Men or something like that, you know.
Oh, but that's so good. That's one of those, whenever you turn it on anytime in it, when it comes on TV, I just have to watch it to the end.
Yeah. See, that's the, you know, joke's on us, right? Like, Howdy's a film aficionado, and he can't get enough of this stuff.
Right. I've been thinking a lot about 12 Angry Men, actually. I didn't know if you had seen that one, but you know, as we've been nearing the end of our movie and we're seeing these rooms from angles that we haven't seen before, like we think we've seen this house, you know, from enough different angles, right? That we get it, but yeah, there's some coming up where I don't think we've ever seen the house from this hallway looking down there, etc. And that's how it is in 12 Angry Men, is basically in three rooms, right? So it's like the courtroom, the jury room, and the bathroom to the jury room, and then one shot outside of the courtroom at the end. And so it's very limited locations, but it doesn't feel that way. It doesn't feel like claustrophobia just for the sake of claustrophobia. Like, they shoot the hell out of that.
That's the magic of cinema, baby. it doesn't feel right when I do it. You get it. That's your thing. I'm not gonna step on that.
Hey, we can be both of our things, baby.
Sure. see how much more effective it is when you do it. But yeah, this cut of Howdy is really quick. And then we are back by the bedside table. Marin has straightened up and is walking away from us to the bed. We only see his lower half. He reaches the bed, bends down, and gathers up the covers and covers Reagan with them. We don't see the yellow blanket, probably being washed right now. It's been replaced with a fresh blue one, almost exactly the same material with that same silky trim, which we can now see as we cut. We're now at the foot of the bed. Same shot as the beginning of this minute, almost as if we're Dimmy and we've come back in to assist. And here, Marin makes the sign of the cross over Reagan. Howdy has been reacting to Marin's presence, but right now he is completely still. Marin crosses himself, and then he sprinkles the holy water, also in the shape of a cross. It might just be my imagination, but this is where I begin to see something on Marin's face. It is the beginning of this expression that we see more clearly at the end of this minute. But right now, his actions are precise and controlled. The crossing, the holy water, there's a little shaking, but he is in control. And I think that adds to what I think is going on here. I think that he is realizing in this moment that this is it. He is going to die in this room. These are his last motions, his last prayer. I think it's hitting him right now.
Now, that's super interesting. I see what you mean there, but I'd love to ask you more about that in a second.
Yeah.
But in the screenplay, and I think this is something from the book, so we have reluctantly Karis leaves. Marin, after a beat, turns to Reagan. The demonic entity reappears instead of the mother. And Reagan Demon, in a seething whisper, says, "You will lose." So here we do it nonverbally. If anything at all. I don't think that we have any kind of action or tactic from the demon in our version at all.
Right. Yeah,
the demon
is
not doing anything. Right.
It hasn't even acknowledged that Karis has left the room.
Yeah, that's a good point. It still looks even like the mother demon, I suppose. You know, in the screenplay, it says that the mother demon is recognizable because she has a circular mole on her face that matches the mother in real life.
I believe that was also part of the book. I never see it in my mind when I read it that way.
Right.
But you get the sense that, like, Howdy's features also change.
In the book, right, yeah.
Right, like physically, yeah.
Yeah, so we don't do that at all here. There's no, I don't know, I don't, I'm sure Dick Smith could have done that if he wanted to, but you know, just this performance, his actor is able to do that, right? These variety of actors who are playing Reagan,
Because Linda Blair has not adopted her physical features, but she has adopted that plaintive look that that Mama Karis had.
Right. So as far as we see in the movie, we don't see the mole disappearing and turning back into the Reagan demon, as it says here in the script.
Right.
And we don't have this line where the demon is saying, okay, you're right. This is it. This is the ending. This is your last moment, or you're going to die up here, or
anything like that.
Yeah. So what do you think about that? So where are you getting the idea that this is it for Marin, because we don't have the demon indicating to us that this is the end? But you say Marin seems to internally understand that.
Exactly, yes. And I like that we don't get it from the demon. I like that he doesn't, suddenly drop the act and be like, now you will lose, right?
Now that we are alone, we are the only ones who understand each other. Back in Africa, yeah. Africa, Marin, remember?
Yes. Pull up a chair. I've got so much on my chest that I want to just we got to catch up. Come on. No, I like that doesn't happen. And no, you're exactly right. All of this I'm getting from Marin. I'm getting mm-hmm. from his expression. Just the way that, and we haven't gotten to it yet. This is after he kneels. He gives this look that I'm going to talk about. But I can see the realization that leads to that look mm-hmm. later on beginning to blossom on his features right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think with this crossing himself, with the sprinkling of the holy water, just looking at his actions, and maybe what I'm doing is like that thing that you had talked about before, where like I'm kind of like projecting my thoughts onto, Max von Sydow's performance, right?
Oh, sure.
I don't know. All I know is that there is a moment that I can kind of pinpoint where he is realizing, oh, this is the last blessing I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
When I get down on my knees, I'm not getting back up.
Mm-hmm.
This is the last person I'm going to be with. This is the last room that I'm going to be in.
Mm-hmm.
I can't explain it beyond that, but just like his motions and his face tell me that he is coming to terms with that right now.
Right. Well, that's kind of the function of the Christian hero. And I mean, not just in Christian literature, but like just about anything in the West, anything in from Europe or America, it is like the hero is there to sacrifice themselves, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Sacrifice themselves literally, or sacrifice out themselves. Who Marty McFly wants to go, this is so silly sounding, but Marty McFly wants to take the truck up to the lake over the weekend and be there with Jennifer and presumably lose his virginity.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has to realize that he has to give up his childish ideals to get his parents back together and encourage them to be children and to like do the fun teen things that he wants to do. He has to help his parents do that in the past, right? And so he sacrifices of himself, and in doing so, he gets to marry Jennifer in the future and gets the parents back together and all of that, right?
Yeah,
that's the function. So he's ready to sacrifice himself. Karis is not ready to recognize his own sacrifice, and that's the journey that we're gonna be seeing in the next couple of minutes of Karis.
Right.
Becoming as ready to sacrifice himself or to sacrifice of himself, like Marin starts the story with.
Right. And I think with Dimmy, I think he would be willing to sacrifice himself, but he doesn't see himself as a good enough sacrifice yet.
Uh-huh. He's not a good vessel for sacrifice.
Yes, right. He's not, he can't contain his...
Right. He has to come to a jarring revelation.
Yes, yes.
That he is.
A shattering realization. He's got to make a little bit of a leap, I would say. A leap of faith.
A leap of faith, uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
But he's got to do what's right, what's last rites.
And we'll be there when that epiphany... Mm-hmm. Hits him like a concussion.
when he needs to father die, he dies. When he dies.
Yeah, yeah.
Father Dyer's there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's just looking down at Dimmy, and it's like, this is supposed to be my job. I'm Father Dyer. You're supposed to be Father. Get up in the morning and be okay. No. But yeah, what I'm saying is, I think the end of Marin's story is hitting him right now.
Right.
Even before he gets down on his knees.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of hitting someone, we get we sort of get a delayed reaction to the holy water by
mm-hmm.
Howdy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's really interesting. It's only after Marin is done sprinkling and begins crossing himself a second time that Howdy reacts.
Mm-hmm.
It's a violent sounding reaction. It sounds mm-hmm. like a couple voices at once, all making this like guttural noise.
Right.
But Reagan's body barely moves. Mostly it's just her face like kind of tightens up for just a bit and then relaxes again. And I really like this detail. It's as if Howdy is also tired, or he's so injured that he can barely react to new injuries.
Or, thinking about the way that you've been, enlightening me about some of this, like maybe Howdy just hasn't been there. You know, maybe he's not at the forefront of these personalities. Maybe this is the mother or Reagan or whoever this is supposed to work, right? And so, like, he gets splashed with this holy water, and then it takes him a second to be like, oh God, like, that's, I'm deep down in there somewhere. I've been letting the mother or Reagan take over for a second.
It takes a while to get to him, huh? Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. But he's, folks, he's so weak he can barely cry out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And his expression still hasn't changed from that plaintive, saintly look,
mm-hmm.
He was given us before. And to that, I think a lesser director would, I don't know, like have a shot of Reagan cracking a tiny smile as soon as Dimmy leaves the room because, you know, he's finally got Marin alone all to himself. But no, we don't have any indication that he likes it or he doesn't like it.
I guess
Dimmy is gone.
I guess like that reminds me of like Thriller, I suppose. Is that what the kind of thing you're talking about? Have you seen Thriller?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah. You know, they're watching the...
Are we talking about the Michael Jackson thing?
The Michael Jackson thing, yeah.
They're watching the
movie, and then in the movie, the person breaks the fourth wall. And then at the end of Thriller, you know, Michael Jackson breaks the fourth wall and kind of looks like this Sean Landis sort of idea. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's like... my favorite of those, that's sort of a John Landis special, is someone looking and breaking the fourth wall.
Mm-hmm.
So my favorite of those is in Trading Places, and they're trying to explain to Eddie Murphy how commodities trading works, right? Because he's a poor guy, he's like a street guy, and they bring him in and they're going to teach him how to be a commodities trader. And they're like, so we trade commodities. He's like, what's a commodity? He's like, well, you know, you can bundle orange juice together and we get enough orange juice as it becomes a commodity, and you could sell and buy them without ever having the orange juice on hand. You have them in pork bellies, which you could find in bacon, which you might put in a bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich. And then Eddie Murphy's character just looks into the camera like, these guys, they think I'm an idiot, you know. So if Howdy's going to give us some John Landis looks, yeah, either the end of a Thriller or or this, like, these guys.
Yeah.
These. Do they know what she did? Fourth wall break.
I mean, speaking of that, right? Like, Dimmy crashes out the window, right? And then there's just a freeze frame. And it's like, you're probably wondering how...
My name's Damien, and my life is pretty crazy.
Let's go all the way back to the beginning.
We open in Iraq. I know. Weird, huh? And I wouldn't know it, but my life was about to change forever.
Yeah. Yeah. Then I met this actress. Hard to believe, I know. But wait, that's not the crazy part.
But but wait, hold on a second. We're doing it from Damien's, but it should be from Pazuzu's. It's Pazuzu leaving Reagan and going into Damien's.
Right, he's in.
And then getting thrown out the window. And then maybe we see a little of Pazuzu like sneaking out of Damien's nostrils or something.
Okay.
And then it's freeze frame.
Right.
My name's Pazuzu, and my life's pretty crazy. I'm the Mesopotamian god of the southwest wind. And here's my wife, Lamashtu.
Back in the day, I ruled with an iron penis. But
that's right. I'm not embarrassed about that.
No.
Look at it.
Yeah. Come on. Take a good look. But man, the 20th century sure has some surprises in store.
That's right.
Apparently people don't appreciate a giant dick half the size of your body. Or your ability to control the winds.
So I found myself in Africa. Where in Africa? Doesn't matter. Just Africa.
Where I met this old guy. Well, he wasn't old at the time. And he and me, we didn't get along.
Yeah, let's just say we had different ideas.
About if possession was okay. Fast forward to 1973. And I decide to take a little trip to Georgetown, Washington.
Whoa, they're making a movie. Let's go and check that out.
Follow this actress home. Turns out she has a kid who likes playing on the Ouija board. That's when I get an idea.
See, my bitch ex-wife, Lamashtu, wouldn't let me play with kids. She'd always kill them before I had the chance.
I mean, when you get right down to it, that was why we broke up. I mean, she wanted kids and I wanted kids, but for different reasons. Neither of which were good, by the way. She wanted to kill him, I wanted to possess him.
So then what? We go through the whole movie and then... And then we get back to the shot of him outside the freeze frame.
Yeah.
As Timmy has thrown himself through the window. Right. And he comes out. Well, that catches you up. That's my crazy Washington, D.C. adventure.
Honestly, I don't know if I'm coming back here for a second visit. But no, Keenan, I'm not even talking about like any fourth wall breaking or anything like that.
Mm-mm-mm.
I'm talking about like we didn't even have a shot of Howdy after Dimmy leaves the room where this act is dropped. Mm-hmm. Not looking right at the fourth wall, but just like this plaintive look is still going on for this entire thing.
Right. And Marin, unlike Karis, is not checking on which personality is there, what the
right
demon seems to be doing, right?
Right.
And obviously he cares enough to ask about Reagan's vitals, right? So he knows
right
that there is something to check on, but he's not getting his cues from Howdy's performance at all.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. He's completely ignoring it, right? So yeah, so after crossing himself a second time, Marin turns and places the holy water back on the table. Then, using that table and then the bed for support, he lowers himself down to a kneeling position. He has taken the ritual from the bedside table, and now, on his knees, he clasps it in both hands, as if he's about to open it, but also looking very much like he's praying.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where he looks up. Out over the room, out over his life. It's so haunting and so sad and so beautiful. If you didn't catch it, folks, go back and look. It's just 1 second of him looking up and looking, I guess, into the room. But we know this is yet another instance, maybe one of the most significant instances, where a character's eyes are not looking at something here in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's brief, but powerful. And then you can see his lips tighten into this line of resolve, and he looks back down at the book. He has just decided, this is it. This is how I go. He finds the page, he opens the book on the bed, and here another pause. He looks up, and our last frame is of Father Merrin, our father, looking at this poor child, having decided to give his life for her. Yeah. And that is the end of this minute. Keenan, do you have anything else to say about this minute?
No, I guess we'll have a little bit left of Merrin before we have to say goodbye.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, in the next mm-hmm. minute.
Yeah, yeah. But before that, folks, we have another email.
Ooh.
Let's take a look. This one is also from John, and this is appropriate. This is actually about Father Merrin's book. Remember, he had written a bunch of books, and he had just written a new book in the world of this story. That was what Tom and the bishop were talking about, and that was what I think the bishop was like, God help us, right?
Mm-hmm.
We had talked about Merrin's philosophy about matter and material things. And so John writes, and he says, this is based on the writings of Jesuit Pierre. Oh, I'm going to try to pronounce this. Pierre, T-E-I-L-H-A-R-D, De, D-E, and then C-H-A-R-D-I-N. Which I think is Chardin.
It looks like it to me, yeah.
Yeah, so Pierre Teilhard de Chardin.
Teilhard.
Okay, let me try that again. Pierre Teilhard de Chardin.
Yeah, there you go.
Yay, I got it. Okay. Yeah. John says, he wrote about all of history moving towards the, quote, omega point.
Hmm.
It was controversial, he says. He also says, interesting trivia. Teilhard is buried at the old Jesuit seminary in upstate New York.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The seminary is now owned by the Culinary Institute of America, CIA. Wait, CIA?
Culinary Institute of America. You don't think it's a front?
They're friends with the flan and biscuit. Institute. Yeah. So the Culinary Institute of America.
Mm-hmm.
So a Jesuit priest is buried on CIA grounds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah. Thank you again, John. We really love getting these emails. Folks, if you want to be like John, write us in theexorcistminute@gmail.com and, let us know if you want us to read it on the air, and we'll do that. But yeah.
Well, let me say a little bit about the Omega Point.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm just very quickly reading about the Omega Point here. That's super interesting,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
As John's pointing us to this, right? So this comes a little bit apparently from the book of Revelation, where Christ describes himself three times as the Alpha and the Omega. The beginning,
right,
and the end. So therefore, mm-hmm, if Christ is also the end, then the Omega Point is where Christ would bring everything together to a final point of unification.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So that makes some, scrambling to read a little bit. That makes some logical sense there, right?
Yeah.
But apparently this was controversial, where people found that this was an attempt to unite a new Christianity with science. So people were, I guess, from both sides of the debate were saying that's not the point of either of those, right? Pope Pius VII had talked about not trying to find a reason why the theory of evolution would fit in with scripture. Warning against that, warning against trying to unite these things.
Interesting. Seems like Marin was all about that.
Yeah, exactly. So that seems to be right. That's really, really cool, John. This seems to me very, very clear. This is what Laddie would be basing Marin's ideas on, Marin's books on.
Yeah.
Super cool.
Yeah.
So this also says here in 1962, so, you know, the time when Blatty was a mature writer by then, something called the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith called out Teilhard's ideas specifically. So he would have been, famous and prominent within Catholic debate at the time. And then more recently, I'm just reading from this Wikipedia page, but more recently, Popes Benedict and Francis have been kinder to Teilhard's ideas and made positive statements on some of them.
Oh, well, there we go.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Wow. Yeah, thank you very much, John. Oh, wow. And yeah, folks, if you want to be cool like John, if you want to write in and share something with us, by all means, theexorcistminute@gmail.com. All right, that was really, really cool. Okay, so Keenan, that is all of my notes. Is there anything else?
No, I think we got it.
All right, folks, this has been another excellent Exorcist Minute. I've been Lester Ryan Clark. You can reach me on all the socials as Lester Ryan Clark.
And I've been Keenan Deas. You can find me on Instagram and Letterboxd at Howdy Keenan.
Yeah, we got our listener group, Compelling Conversations. Go check that out and request to join, and we'll let you in here with us. Thank you so much to everyone who has shared the show by word of mouth or on social media, and a big thank you to everyone who has given us a 5-star rating on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to our show. We really appreciate that. It's going to help our little podcast grow and find more cool people like you. Okay, Keenan, are you thinking what I'm thinking?
I think I am, Lester.
Folks, until next time.
The power of Marty McFly compels you.
But yeah, you figure, though, that in the crossover, Dimmy would be Marty McFly and Doc Brown would be Marin.
He'd be a terrible Marin, but sure. Yeah. Marin would be a terrible Doc Brown, right?
Yeah, they don't fit each other at all, except for the fact that they're both old.
Exactly.
It's your faith, Dimmy.
As long as Einstein can be Dyer, that's fine with me.
Yes.
The little dog.
Oh, he would be perfect. He would be perfect, little Einstein. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That's him at the piano. Then who is Biff and the parents, I guess? Who does he have to get Howard and Chris back together?
Yeah, that's exactly what you got to do. You got to do what The Exorcist couldn't do.
That's right.
Is get that family back together.
Look, Damien, you're starting to disappear. Look at the picture. Oh, geez, Doc. Well, who do you think Biff is in this case? The one who's keeping Howard and Chris from getting back together?
Oh, Biff is Pazuzu.
Sorry.
I don't even care at this point if Pazuzu is Howdy, but just like, just the big hulky statue of Pazuzu.
Oh, God, yeah.
That's a bit.
Giant schwong. Yeah. It's like, say, Calvin, why don't you make like a tree and get out of here?
Why don't you make like an ancient civilization and hold on even past the point where you realize that... that the world is taking a new direction and just sadly and pitifully peter out or be taken over by another civilization. Nerd.
What do you mean we got to get to 88 miles per hour here in this place? Nothing ever matters. You say one thing, I say another thing. Well, we haven't found a spot for Reagan, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Doesn't Marty have like a little sister or something?
Yeah, he's got a little brother, a little sister.
Yeah.
And they're slowly disappearing from the picture because he's messed up the timeline. So they disappear first, luckily, so that Marty can be like, oh, God, I'm next.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Linda's gone. Dave's gone.
Yeah. Okay, so they hop in the DeLorean, but they accidentally go to ancient Mesopotamia.
Right.
And they got to get Pazuzu and Lamashtu back together.
Oh, yes, of course, of course. Right, or else none of this will have happened. Absolutely. Yeah. So they're all disappearing. Mm-hmm. They have a copy of The Exorcist.
Uh-huh.
The movie.
Yes.
And every time they watch it, they're disappearing more and more.
Yeah, no.
And they fixed it enough. They fixed it. The horseman has disappeared.
Right.
Right, but they couldn't figure out how to fix that well enough to get the horseman to stick around.
There so was the horseman.
Yeah, he was there for sure.
Yeah.
They had to sacrifice something.
Before this whole timeline thing, right? And he goes back and he's like in present day Iraq.
Mm-hmm,
and right. And he says to the curator, have you ever thought of like opening a university?
Opening a university, that's the craziest idea I've had. Imagine me, the dean of a Jesuit university.
Yeah. They'll call me like, and Marty just like walks out of there as he says, Right. And there's the lady, and she's got all those flyers and she's like, save the Exorcist stairs.
They're tearing down the Exorcist stairs.
They're tearing down the Exorcist stairs. Save the Exorcist stairs.
Two people in 2 months have fallen down these stairs and thrown their heads all the way around. This is serious. You know, how could they do that? It's like a cultural landmark, Doc.
Yeah. Right. And that's see that's how Reagan wins the the music contest at school. Mm-hmm. is Howdy helps her a little bit. He possesses her just enough so that she can play guitar really, really good. And she does Johnny B. Good. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, oh my God. And so what's the joke there? He's like, you know, you've been listening to that new sound. Well, listen to this.
That's right.
Who does he say? Chuck Berry?
Well, he calls Chuck, but he says, it's your cousin, Marvin. Right. Marvin Berry. You know, you've been looking for that new sound. Well, listen to this.
And Marvin's like, I just hear backwards talking. What's the... is this another trick, Marvin? I don't have time. I'm a very important, famous musician that everybody knows.
Chuck Paul is dead.
Who's Paul? I don't understand.
Your cousin, Marvin. Marvin.
Yes,
Barry.
Marvin. I know. I know it's you. Why are you bothering me? I'm very, very busy being a famous musician that everybody knows and everybody loves. Keenan. I just realized we're talking about like Back to the Future and we're doing all this Back to the Future stuff. Did we mention Back to the Future at all in this episode?
Like in the body of the episode?
Like in the body of the, because that's how these things work. Like we do like these little riffs after the music based on stuff that we came up with organically in the show.
Oh God. You've got to go back, Lester.
Oh,
you've got to go back to the beginning of the episode.
Oh, no.